I want to welcome everybody to another wonderful edition of Saturday AM Live, May 1st. Is it May 1st, May Day, I think? No, maybe not. I didn't have a very good history teacher, so I shouldn't even start on these modes. But I want to remind everybody, if you stick around for the end after we're finished with our wonderful guests, I've got a couple announcements of what's coming up, and then also to segue in with what's coming up NECN-wise and give you a little kind of inside connection information on that one. So let's jump in here. As a reminder, the portion of today's call, the first section, you can hear all of this in its entirety. And I really encourage you to have pen and paper in front of you. I always do. Always write down some great notes. But in its entirety is recorded at SaturdayAMLive.com. And you can go back if you miss something or if you think there's valuable information there to refer to a friend. It's always there for playback purposes. So with that in mind, I want to, first of all, again, welcome everybody to the call. And Stacy Grieve is, and I did pronounce that correctly, correct?
Yes, you did.
Okay, I want to make sure there. And Stacy and I, unless I, was not with it, I don't believe we've ever met in person, which is kind of unusual for my guest. And I met through a colleague, actually one of our humans being more facilitators. She introduced me to Stacy's book. So I know what she looks like. I know quite a bit about her life from just scanning through her book rather quickly. And that's about it. So, Stacy, first of all, welcome to the call.
Thank you. Happy
and
to be here.
The book that I'm referring to, which is kind of the title of what we're going to talk about, is, again, What Are You Waiting For? It's oh, my goodness, I should have wrote it down in front
of me. It's actually in your clothes. It's called Why Are You Waiting?
Why Are You Waiting? Why Are You Waiting? And it's not the food that's making you fat. Is that
That's it, exactly.
Okay. So we'll get into that in a bit, but let's rewind a little bit and go back to what started you on that journey. I don't know what the percentage of people in the world that author a book, but it's got to be a pretty small percentage. So,
well, they say there's a book in everyone, but I guess only a few people have to move forward into reality.
pull the book out of the brain. So
right, exactly.
So tell us about your background.
Great, thanks, Vance. I'm a NECN person. I'm a platinum wellness consultant up here in Toronto, Canada. And NECN was a big part of my recovery, but I'll get to that. That's sort of the end of the story. So the beginning of the story is that I was an overweight child, quite overweight. At age six, going into kindergarten, I weighed about 90 pounds, where your average kid weighs about 45. By 15 years of old in high school, I weighed 215 pounds. You know, your average kid probably weighs about 120. And in my adulthood, I topped out the scales at about 306 pounds. I think I was actually heavier than that, but I refused to step on a scale. So,
wow.
306 is my official heaviest. Now, I was always really good at dieting. I never, ever had a problem with dieting. In fact, my mother took me to my first weight loss group meeting style thing when I was about 12 years old. And I did really well with it. I got the weight off, absolutely no problem. I can focus when I want to, and, you know, I wanted to be slim, so I focused on getting the weight off, and boom, the weight came off. But unfortunately for me, like about 95% of other people who diet, the trouble was after the diet was over, the weight always came back, and it usually came back with a vengeance, meaning that I ended up being heavier after diet than I was when the diet started. Excuse me. Now, this could be... this was incredibly discouraging to me. It was I got quite depressed. As I got fatter and fatter, I got less hopeful that there was a way out. But dieting was the only thing I knew. It was the only thing my doctor ever talked to me about. It was the only thing any of the various different diet plans and weight loss plans that I tried talked about. It was always focused on the food. So off I would go, and I would do yet another diet, and I would get the weight off. In fact, at my largest single time ever that I shed some pounds, I got about 135 pounds off in 1 year. Now, again, the weight started to come back. So after I gained about 75 pounds of that weight back, to say I was despondent would be an understatement, and I asked my doctor for some help. I had started to realize at this case that no one was tying me down and force-feeding me. It was me who was doing this to me. But for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why. So anyway, my doctor was very helpful. She referred me to an eating disorder specialist, kind of a therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist sort of thing, and I went and I spent an hour and a half on his couch. It was very typical, you know, tell me about your childhood, and I lied on the couch. And I remember sort of laughing at the cliche of it all. But at the end of the 90 minutes, he gave me some profound advice, and he said, I've got good news and bad news. And I said, okay, I'm ready. So he said, the good news is there's nothing wrong with you. The bad news is I can't help you, and that was certainly not what I wanted to hear. But he then went on to say that the problem was that I had trained my body through dieting. I had trained my body to expect periods of deprivation followed by periods of excess. And that if I was ever going to truly get my weight under control, I needed to take a more moderate approach. I needed to end dieting forever. Now, since dieting was the only tool I'd ever been shown, although I hadn't been successful, I was pretty upset at this news, and I remember walking down the street after that appointment, and I was literally crying, thinking I didn't know what I was supposed to do. However, once the dust settled, I figured this guy was an expert. You know, if he was an expert, I should probably listen to him. So from that day forward, I gave up dieting. But what I, at the same time, I had also, I started to get involved with Neekin. And, I'd attended Humans Being More, and I started to learn about the importance of, your thoughts and what's going on in your head between your ears and how that can affect your life.
Mm-hmm.
I was also doing, for those of you who've been around Neekin for a while, there was a group study program called Lead the Field that we were following. And so I was doing a Lead the Field program in relation to my Neekin business. But I had this big aha one day. I thought, oh, my God, if I just change the words in this to be instead of words associated with business to words associated with weight and fitness and health, it's all exactly the same thing. So that started me down another path that ultimately was, I believe, the reason for my success. And my success is now that I'm 140 pounds less than I was at my heaviest, and I've managed to keep that weight off for 7 years.
Wow.
I never diet anymore. I truly eat what I want. I eat when I want, what I want. I never, ever, ever really think about my weight anymore. And so that is a huge difference compared to the old me that was constantly, it was always a battle. I was always either on a diet or off a diet, eating whatever I wanted or, completely depriving myself. And I have to tell you, life on this side of the fence is an awful lot better than it was life on the other side of the fence. That's for sure.
Well, I can only imagine, because getting in a pattern of, like exactly like you said, depriving and then, the feast and famine back and forth, it's got to send any body, any physical body, roller coaster back and forth. I mean, in the same way, I love the way you make the connection emotionally, because we could do the same thing with our emotions, and we do on a regular basis, that we go from one extreme to the other, and there's never a balance.
Exactly.
I'm sure the concept of the five pillars of health weighed heavy in this, the aspect of balance, that we can't keep going one extreme to the other as we see so many in our culture today doing and getting completely out of whack, or that's what they become known for, that one item. I'm curious, Stacey, when going way back to your childhood, any siblings?
Yeah, I do. I have a brother. I'm the eldest. I have a brother and a sister.
Okay. And did they ever deal with weight issues?
My brother, no. I mean, he's, maybe fought 10 pounds here or there just from some bad habits and that kind of thing. My sister, no, when she was younger, but unfortunately now she is battling quite a few pounds. So.
Okay. Now, and did they, even as a child, when you said your mom took you to a weight group thing? Was there something that they pegged it on? Because, I mean, I look at the kids, the classmates of our two daughters, and I can see just going on field trips with them why they're in the shape they're in, because of, the choices of what they're eating or what their parents are allowing them to eat. And I can peg it real quick, but was there something specific that they had attributed it to? I mean,
the only thing the doctor ever checked on me was my thyroid. I mean, every single year when I'd go in for my physical, my thyroid would be checked. And I prayed every year, please find something wrong with that so at least I could have a solution.
Yeah.
But fortunately, they never did find anything wrong with it. The thyroid wasn't my issue. What I now realize was happening was it's sort of a twofold thing. I guess I had a genetic predisposition to being on the heavy side. My father has definitely battled his weight for his whole life, and even my mother when she was younger did. So that was part of it. But I don't believe that genetics necessarily determine your outcome. I do believe you can, lifestyle, what is it? They say genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, it was a bit of a predisposition. I don't think that was it. I was a very, very active child, unlike kids of today where, they're spending a lot of time in front of the video games and all that sort of thing. We didn't have all those. I mean, I was a normal kid. I climbed trees. I played games. I rode a bicycle, all that sort of stuff. So it certainly wasn't inactivity in my case. Ultimately, what I believe it was that I ended up turning to food for solace. I became, at a very young age, an emotional eater. I got things from food that I guess I wasn't getting or didn't perceive myself to be getting from the people and situations around me. Food never rejected me. Food never scolded me. Food never, at least while I was eating it, never made me feel bad. It certainly made me feel bad down the road. But it didn't during the time. It was an instant gratification.
Sure.
And feeding ourselves is primal. I mean, we are programmed on a very, very deep level to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't something that we don't do naturally. It takes a huge concerted effort not to eat. The other thing, too, I learned is you get a lot of attention. Children like to get attention. We've all heard about, don't give negative attention and that kind of thing. But you get a lot of attention when you're heavy, and you get a lot of attention when you're losing the weight, and then you also get a lot of attention when the weight's coming back. And so I also think part of my driving force was the attention that I was getting as a result of my weight.
Interesting. See, I would think, at one point, and every time I meet someone in face-to-face and I share this with them, they don't believe me that I was at one point, 40 pounds heavier than I am today. And they're like, where? Come on. 5'6". Where did you put it? I said, no, I can show you pictures. And they don't believe me. But I totally, 100% agree with you. But I never remember getting attention as the weight was going on over the course of several years. But definitely when it was coming off. And I love that. I mean, that
you can definitely get hooked on that, and I think I became a little bit addicted to that as well.
So that's interesting that you'd say you'd get attention both ways, on and off, and going through that cycle. It's interesting you say that because this craving that we have, and to separate out the two words, passion versus lust, whereas passion brings satisfaction, whereas lust leaves us craving for more.
Right.
And, when it comes to food, when it comes to being out of balance, when we're lusting for something, even when we get it, we're just going to be craving more. And interesting that you say, that the food became the comfort. So in the process, in that transition of, you said, about 7 years ago, getting to the point where you realize, okay, we can't continue down the cycle of trying this diet or doing this diet or doing whatever. What did you do to get you? I mean, you obviously made some food choices. There had to be something.
Oh, yeah. The food definitely became part of it. Although I kind of use the analogy of, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Mm-hmm. The same thing with food. If you're abusing your body with food, the food is just the tool. You could have chosen alcohol, you could have chosen, drugs, you could have chosen whatever sort of behavior for those of us where food becomes our thing, for whatever reason food is our thing, not the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think, there's a couple of different things. There's definitely, just what you were saying there about lust and passion, there's a difference between getting pleasure out of something and being addicted to it. And one of the ways, just like you said, one of the ways you can tell the difference between the two of those is if you're truly getting pleasure out of something, and even those of us who are addicted to food, I mean, we are on some level, we are getting pleasure while we're in the midst of eating it. But pleasure, something that's pleasurable, a few hours down the road, you'll still be basking in the pleasure, or at least be able to remember the pleasure that was occurring fondly. Whereas opposed to with an addiction, a few minutes, a few hours down the road, you actually feel awful and you feel empty. In fact, quite often you can feel even worse than you were, before it started. So I just think that's an important difference I wanted to point out, because one of the things I hear quite often, I do coaching around this now too, one of the things I hear quite often from people is, but I find it pleasurable to eat, like I enjoy eating. And so my question always is, you're enjoying the activity at the time, but how does it feel 15 minutes or an hour or two later? Is it still pleasurable? And definitely for all of us, the answer to that is no. We start beating ourselves up and that kind of thing. I think I digressed there, Vance. What was your question?
No, you're reminding me of exactly what, all the cruises that we've been on. I tend to think it's wrong to have to pick one of the 5 or 6 desserts that are offered, because they all are so amazing, and many of which I've never even seen or heard of before. And so I will usually order 3 or 4 of them and not eat the whole thing. And if I get carried away, then about an hour and a half later, man, you talk about a sugar rush, everything. And it's just exactly what you're talking about when it comes to an addiction. And it's amazing how this parallels with an addiction, whether it be alcoholism, sex, smoking, any vice that's out there, that when we partake of it, it leaves us craving for more. And interesting to know that, that food can definitely be in the same category, that if it's if we don't have the right perspective, the right psychology on it.
Right. And sugar actually is a drug. They found that sugar, white sugar, processed sugar, is actually far more addictive to the human body than even heroin is. And so that's one of the things most people don't realize. And that's why if you do, you know, if you are you're working on, you know, staying on track and making some healthier choices, and you know, you do fall off the wagon, and that's an important thing. We all fall off the wagon. You know, to be human is to err.
Mm-hmm.
And too many people, I think, go into their weight loss programs, whatever program they're following, with this expectation of themselves that they're going to be perfect.
Sure.
And that sets you up right there for a disaster, because then the minute you fall off the wagon, you make a poorer choice, whether it's for one meal, one day, or even 1 week, the next thing you know, it starts down this path of, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this, I'm a loser, I can't do this, this is too hard, blah, 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 you know, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so recognizing that you are going to have moments where you maybe don't make the healthiest choices, but you can't change the past. So part of the recovery for this is forgiving yourself when that does happen and moving forward. I mean, you can't change the past even if it was 5 minutes ago. If you ate a bag of cookies 5 minutes ago, there's nothing you can do about it now.
Sure.
And so beating yourself up and making yourself feel worse even emotionally is definitely not the route to go. So you want to avoid that kind of behavior. And that takes some time to learn. And in fact, that's all part of your programming. And really that's the main part of what my book is about and what my story is about and what I really feel was the one single key to my recovery. Was changing my programming or changing my conditioning. Whatever it was that drives any of us to develop the programming or the conditioning that causes us to turn to food for solace. You know, we have a rough day, we want to eat. If somebody says something not nice to us, we want to eat. We're upset about something, we want to eat. And for some of us, even when we're having a happy day, that spurs some emotions that makes us want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's just all programming and conditioning. Not everyone on the planet turns to food for solace. So it shows you right there that there's a difference between the way we're programmed. And so a couple of the things I had to really work on in terms of my programming, the very first one, and this is the one I got from that program I was studying through, Lead the Field, was how you see yourself. There was an exercise in Lead the Field about business, that if your business wasn't progressing as quickly as you would like it to be, you needed to take a look at how you saw yourself. Did you see yourself as a business person? And I recognized in those days that I didn't, and I really saw the relationship between, you know, how I saw myself and my results. And that was really the aha I had about my weight. I had been sitting, at one point, another turning moment for me, I was sitting on a beach in Mexico, and this was when I was actually about 15 pounds less than I am now. I found that weight far too hard to maintain. The weight I'm at now is very easy for me, and I think I was a little bit too skinny then. But I was sitting on a beach in Mexico, the absolute lightest I had ever been in my entire life, and I was looking around, and I caught myself actually paying attention to the heavy people on the beach.
Mm.
What were they wearing? How were they covering themselves up? What were they doing? I was sort of fixated on the heavy people, and then I realized that it was because I was still seeing myself as one of them.
Sure.
Even though no one else was seeing me that way, I was seeing myself. And what that led to is how you see yourself in your mind's eye. And in fact, this is an exercise for everybody in the call right now, or even for listeners later. I'm just going to ask you to do something right now. Close your eyes and picture yourself doing whatever it is you're doing right now. If you're standing, you're sitting, you're lying down. Just close your eyes and picture yourself as you are right this minute. Okay, now open your eyes. Let me ask you, at what weight did you picture yourself? And for most of us, it's going to be the weight that we're at, or perhaps even a heavier weight. Now, your brain is always, 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 your brain and your programming is always going to direct your external movements and actions to reflect what it sees internally. So if it sees you as being heavy, it wants to balance the inside and the outside, so it's going to direct you to do the actions, to take the actions that are going to confirm its view of itself, in other words, to make you heavy. It's going to direct you to walk aimlessly to the fridge and shove stuff into your face. It's going to direct you to find an excuse not to do your workout that day. It's going to direct you to find an excuse why choosing the 6 desserts instead of having a salad or something is a better thing to do in order to confirm the inner view with the outer view. So one of the first steps you have to make in order to fully recover from food or any addiction is to change your mind's eye view of yourself. And how I teach people to do that, what I did myself, was I found a picture of myself at a weight that I liked. And if you don't actually have one of those, these days with technology, it's certainly easy enough to make one. You know, find a picture of someone with a body type similar to yours at a healthy weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're 5'2" and a little on the stocky side, naturally, don't be picking a 6'4" leggy supermodel. That's going to set up an incongruency. But find a picture of yourself at a weight you liked, and make a few copies of that picture and put it up all over the place. And what that's going to do is every time, it has to be your face on the body, because what you're doing is training your brain to recognize that you, in fact, are a slim person. Even if on the outside that is far from true at this stage, it's the very first step that you need to take in order to get your brain to start directing you to do the things that are going to match that internal view. So that's the first thing you need to do, is change that. And then you also, from a brain standpoint, have to pay attention to how you're talking to yourself. And this is a lot of, I think, where Humans Being More comes into. There's an exercise we do in Humans Being More where we, different people play different roles in terms of the chatter that can be going on in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us talk to ourselves, if we have, you know, any sort of insecurities about our weight or issues with our weight, most of us, with regards to our weight, don't speak to ourselves very kindly. The voice that's going on in our head, the little monkeys as I refer to them, is quite often saying things like, oh, you'll never be thin. You can't do this. You've tried before and failed. You'll never be able to do this. This is too hard. And sometimes it's a lot more brutal than that even. The voice that you want to have talking to you in your head, you want to have, instead of a critic, you want to have more of a coach, a friend, an ally. So you need to change your internal dialogue to be something more along the lines of, you can do this. You are doing this. You're fantastic. You deserve to be in a slim body. You deserve to be healthy. And when those voices are, when the voices like are more positive or sort of harping at you in your head all the time, it can have a huge, huge impact on what your actions are on the outside. We all need to be, first and foremost, we all need to be our own coach and our own positive background as opposed to a negative background. And for a lot of us with weight, in fact, I would even hazard to say all of us with weight issues, that voice can be quite negative.
Sure.
So those are just two ways in which our programming affects us, our conditioning. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because as you're sharing this, I'm thinking about, I just had the opportunity to host Humans Being More a few weeks ago, and the group that I was with, one of the people would, that was, this was a major focus as far as weight loss and because of the situation they were in. And it's so powerful to watch even the facial expression change when the positive affirmation or the positive phrase is shared and spoken, you know, speaking mm-hmm. it into existence. And we forget this. Stacey, I'm curious because I'd written something down a few weeks ago that, actually I wrote it down years ago, but I found it again. But the responsibility that we have to celebrate little victories along the way. For somebody who the food is the comfort. What do you replace that with? I mean, if you know, let's say the goal is to be, you know, 50 pounds lighter over the course of a year or whatever, and, you know, 5 or 10 pounds later into it, there's a success. I mean, this is a small victory. Without having the food as that comfort, if that was the major issue, what do you do?
Well, you need to take some active action steps. This is something that's not likely to fall into place without you orchestrating it, but you do need to consciously make up your mind that you are going to work on avoiding the food. And again, you're not going to be perfect at it. But so what that means is you're going to want to set up a support group of people who are there to help you. They may be friends, they may be family, they may be, you know, your swim buddy and Humans Being More. It doesn't really matter who. But you want to be careful who you choose with this. You want to make sure it's somebody who truly does have your best interests at heart. And ask them to be, you know, to be a help for you. So if you're sitting there at 9 o'clock at night and the urge to go grab 6 or 10 cookies is, you know, or even 2 cookies is overcoming you, you want to know that you can pick up a phone and call that person or have a group of people that you can call and say, I'm struggling, help me with this. So right there, you've taken an action step. You might want to develop some habits. One of the things I found quite helpful to me was actually to make sure that I had some hobbies, sorry, not habits, hobbies going on. That so when the need to feed sort of overcame me, I could keep my hands busy doing something else. And that something else can be anything. It doesn't matter, just as long as it's something that you enjoy and you don't find it being a trial to take care of it. For me, I sewed a lot. I was quite artistic. You know, I just would do anything to keep my hands busy so that my hands weren't venturing over to the fridge into the cookie bag. You also, I mentioned consciously, you do need to, one of the other things that you need to become very aware of is what triggers you to get into the need to feed or into the fridge in the first place. It's hard to stop a behavior if you don't know what's actually driving that behavior. So I'm a big advocate of journaling, and I believe that it's really important in your recovery to spend some time every day with your journal and just let, you know, put pen to paper and let the thoughts flow. The important thing with journaling is you want to make sure that you have a place where you can keep your journal away from prying eyes, because you want to be able to be 100% honest in it without having to worry that your husband, your children, your roommates, you know, whoever is going to be poking through your stuff and find your journal and read something that, you know, maybe a deep-seated feeling of yours, but one that you prefer not to share with them. So that's the first thing, is make sure you have a journal well hidden. Maybe keep it at the office, for instance, if at home is not a place where you could have a sort of sacred space for it. But in your journal, one of the things I like to get my coaching students doing is we start with them in the morning waking up and just immediately journaling on how they feel. Did they wake up in a good mood or in a bad? Are they feeling optimistic or pessimistic? You know, what's sort of going on? And then at the end of the day, when they come home, is to again get their journal out and to spend some time journaling sort of how the day went for them. You know, was it a good day in that they stayed on track and moved closer to their goals, or was it a day that moved them further away from their goals, i.e. they fell off the wagon? Who were they with that day? What kind of situations were they in? What topics of conversation came up? How were you feeling? That's so important. How were you feeling? And if you do this over the course of a few days or a few weeks, pretty quickly you'll start to recognize some patterns. Perhaps there's certain people in your life that after you've spent some time interacting with them, you know, in person or on the phone, you find yourself, you know, being drawn towards the fridge. Maybe there's a particular topic of conversation that comes up, regardless of who you're talking about it with, that, you know, causes you to it's one of your triggers, causes you to want to eat. Whatever your triggers are, once you become aware of them, then you can go to that place where when they happen, because we all get triggered. I mean, you know, you can't change. The only thing you can change in life is yourself. You can't change what's going on around you, only how you respond to it. So once you become aware of your triggers, and let's say, for instance, that there's a certain friend you have that when you're around him or her, for whatever reason, you find yourself wanting to eat. Well, then once you become aware that that's a trigger, then you can start to make some choices, as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction, and that's what I mean by trigger. Most of us have had this situation, you know, where maybe we're sitting on the couch, we're watching TV, and then the next thing we know, we're standing in front of the fridge, and we honestly have no recollection of how we got from the couch to the fridge. That's because we were triggered. Something triggered us. It was in our programming, and our brain just directed us to do this without any conscious awareness of it.
Sure.
But once you know what your triggers are, then you can start to consciously react to them or respond to them, as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction. Now, it isn't easy. At the beginning, you're going to feel this huge pull. It's like, okay, I know that what she said bugs me, and even though I know that, I still want to eat. But eventually what will happen is you'll go, okay, so I know what's happening here. I'm being triggered. That's why I'm feeling this need to feed right now. But I have a choice here. I can act on the need to feed, which, you know, an hour from now is going to leave me feeling not so great. Or I can call a friend, read a book, pick up my knitting needles, you know, go for a walk, make some Nikon calls, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And wait for this moment to pass, and wait for the trigger to pass.
Sure.
And that is a huge part of recovery, too, because it's hard to work against something if you don't know what that something is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hugely important.
Mm-hmm. So it really is, ultimately, and as I'm looking back over my notes, the key focus here is the subtitle of your book. It's not the food that's making us fat. And you also mentioned something that it's 5% of dieters are actually successful.
Yeah, if you look at dieting, the success of dieting not in just getting the weight off, but in fact keeping the weight off, most people who go on a diet, they're not thinking, okay, I'm going to take the weight off this time and, you know, 6 months from now I'm going to do it all over again. I think we all enter that sort of phase hopeful that this is going to be the last time we have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that statistic that 95% of dieters fail is that in the long term, 95% of people, a year or two after the diet is over, have regained some, all, or even more of the weight back.
Wow.
Now, the reason I believe this happens is there's an equation about life that I like to use, and this is so important, and the equation is very simple, but it goes like this. Thoughts create feelings create actions, and actions create results. So if you're coming into that equation in the middle, i.e. you're dealing only with the actions, and that's what dieting is. It's dealing with the action of what kind and how much food are you putting in your mouth. That's an action step. It's missing the underlying sense of what is driving that action.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's where you get into your triggers.
Sure. No, that makes perfect sense. And I know statistically in Canada, which is home for you, not as high percentage-wise as it is in the States, as far as the percentage of people that are overweight or even obese, but up there. I mean,
we're up there, yeah.
You're definitely up there. And I know that I spoke with somebody a few months ago, and I said, yeah, I understand that, you know, Americans are at the 65%. She said, actually, it's now hit right at 70. And that was a shocker for me.
Are you serious? 70%?
Yeah, and she works in the weight industry. This is her job.
Wow.
As a dietitian, as a counselor, a coach, so to speak. And so it's parts of the country are even higher than that because of the lifestyle and because of patterns and exactly what you're talking about here. Is there a couple things, as we wind up this conversation, is there a couple, besides, I know how valuable it would be to get a copy of your book, and where can people get that? I mean,
oh,
on Amazon or where?
Through my website is, I don't have distribution anywhere in the States yet, so through the website is the only place, and the website is Why Are You Waiting, WHYAREYOU, waiting, and then waiting is WEIGHTING, so whyareyouwaiting.com. And I've actually set up a special 15% discount for the people listening to this call today and for this week through the replay. I'd love to offer everybody on your call, Vance, a 15% discount off the price of the book as well as actually the price of the shipping. So,
well, wonderful.
When you go to the checkout page on the website, you'll see there's a coupon code box in honor of you, Vance. The coupon code is Vance, V-A-N-C-E. So any of the listeners who are interested in getting the book, just type in Vance. And the 15% will automatically be taken off.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to, you know, share my message because there's so many people out there who are struggling with their weight and don't know that it's actually an internal thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing only with the external and wondering why they're not getting results. And it ends up, you know, it leaves you feeling bad. It's like, oh, I'm a failure. Other people seem to do this. I can't do this. What's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with you. What's wrong is the system.
Absolutely.
You need to find another way. So,
it's such the same thing with whether it's our success as an individual when it comes to the economics of our life, or you know, family dynamics. You can run right on down the five pillars. You know, family.
Yeah, definitely.
Every single one of them. It really is. And we could say, well, you know, they had a life handed to them on a silver spoon. No, let's take a look at what's going on here. And emotionally, we are what we think. We become what we allow to roll around in our mind. That, you know, if we're constantly thinking about this, and I see people like this all the time, that, you know, you take our economy right now, which, it's bad, 10% unemployment, but that means 90%.
90% employment,
are working. And I saw a news clip last night as I sat down and I was just flipping through channels and I caught a news story about, you know, different things. And it's amazing who the people that we interview, and it's so much the same with exactly what you're talking about here, that if we develop a pattern, thoughts equal feelings equal actions equal results, that whole pattern, that it starts with the thoughts.
Can I give your listeners just two quick little tips on
Absolutely.
Ways they quickly
Absolutely.
Change their thinking? One of the things is, one of the ways we're programmed is around the words lose, loss, and loss.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of programming around that, and you know that's true, because if you think about the last time you lost your keys or your grocery list or your money, your brain goes into hyper overdrive. It's hard to concentrate on anything else until those lost items are recovered, until that's resolved. Well, the same thing happens when you're talking about your weight. If you're walking around talking about, I'm losing weight, I've lost weight, you know, that kind of thing, your brain actually, there's so much programming, conditioning around that word loss, that in some way your brain's actually also spending time trying to find that weight again. So I highly encourage everybody listening to actually find a new word. I use the word shed. I'm comfortable with the word shed. I've shed so much weight. I've shed pounds. Other people use release. Other people use trash. It doesn't really matter as long as it's
sure.
a word that doesn't have that same sort of emotion around it.
I use the word donate.
Okay, great.
Because, you know, I've always been very, my wife and I, since we've been married, been, even before that, always very generous, and to, with our finances and with our time, enjoy volunteering. So the word donate to us, that was, that brings about a very positive feeling. I mean, even chemical reaction.
From yeah, so exactly.
And I can say,
word.
Yeah, I donated 35, almost 40 pounds of
there
who
you
I
go.
Used to be, and I didn't want it back. It was a gift. I did not want it back.
That's great.
It totally changes the perspective. So that's one. What's the other
one? And then the second one is, we all have this tendency in life. It's just, again, it's a societal thing. But we all have this tendency in life to focus on what we don't want. I don't want to get fat. I don't want to gain weight. I don't want my pants to be too tight. I don't want to be embarrassed when I try to jog. Those sorts of things. And a very simple switch you can make is take whatever it is you don't want and figure out what it is you want out of that. So instead of, I don't want to be fat, change your thinking to, I want to be slim. I want to be healthy. I want to be active. I want my pants to fit comfortably. There's a very different energy behind an I want statement versus an I don't want. And I don't want almost makes you feel sort of like a victim. Like it's really up to the universe or God to decide what's going to happen for you. Where an I want statement, there's some energy around it, and what that's going to do is set your brain up to start looking for solutions to help you find ways to get what it is that you want. Where your brain can't necessarily do that with an I don't want.
Mm. Mm.
So two little tips are out of the book right there for you.
Yeah, no, and that just sets us up to succeed because, we'd never walk into, as a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old to get our driver's license and say, I don't want to fail, I don't want to fail, I don't want to fail.
Right.
We're going to walk in saying, hey, I think I can do this, and tests are never fun, and I think life is a test, especially when you're dealing with something that haunts so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
For such a long time, we've become, accustomed to it, and again, our culture segues us into, just like you on that beach in Mexico, all of a sudden you see, and what you're fixated on is, the people that are not at their ideal weight, and it just, the way our culture has kind of whacked us all up, so.
Yeah, it has. There's lots of great things about our cultures and our society, but there's a lot of things that, could use a little improvement.
Well,
that's what I'm working on, is trying to improve the world a bit for, people who have a few pounds to shed. So whether it's, the same 5 pounds you've been battling, the same 50 or the same 150, I guarantee you, invest in yourself, spend the $20 to get a copy of the book and do read it and stay in touch with me because I've been there. I know what it's like. I can help you get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, and I want to encourage everybody to do that, and I'm going to do the same. Because I think it's so crucial that if we, again, looking at the five pillars of health, that if we can target, and I've always been a proponent of this, if we can tweak every area just a little bit, I mean, we may get to where we think, well, in the family category, our family's whole, we spend a lot of quality time together, we do things together, and, and however, if we become comfortable in that, then something's wrong. So even if we're at our ideal weight, maybe we're supposed to have a copy of Stacy's book to use as a reference for other people so that when we meet somebody that's dealing with some major stuff, because I think there's probably every week I hear of another person that says, I chose to go on this, and I look at them and I want to say, and I'm almost there, bold enough to say, I feel for you because I know you're going to spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on prepackaged whatever, and we're not addressing the issue.
Right, exactly. And for those, again, I know this is a Neekin-based call. There's a whole chapter in the book about how the Neekin products helped me. I had some sleep issues. Those are definitely tied into weight. I talk about the sleep system. The water is definitely an important part of a healthy body metabolism, including weight. I talk about the cardio strides, and I talk about some of the nutritionals in the book. So the book is also a great reference just to, have in your library for those of you doing Neekin as a business. Having your library to, as just another tool to help you educate people on, how and why a wellness home is so important. So.
Okay, well, fantastic. And again, the title of the book is
Why Are You Waiting?
WhyAreYouWaiting.com is the website, www.whyareyouwaiting.com. And Stacy Grieve has been our guest, and I want to thank you because I usually over the next week I look back over all my notes and then kind of rehearse in my head, okay, this is what she said, so then I can in turn pass it on. So I want to encourage you guys, those of you who took notes, to do that, to look over it, and maybe there's an area here that needs to be focused. I mean, for me, the biggest thing was desserts. It's like, Vance, quit indulging. I mean, you don't have to consume everything. You can walk by it. Some people, you know, and again, it was just the mindset, because I knew what was going to happen 45 minutes to an hour later. I've always felt that way.
Right.
You know, something as simple as donuts. I've never liked them. It wasn't because I didn't like them. I just didn't enjoy the feeling 45 minutes late. And I learned that as a kid. I just, you know, and everybody thinks I'm weird because I can walk right by a whole plate of donuts and it doesn't even bother me.
Yeah, there's people I know who don't like chocolate, and for the life of me, I can't fathom that.
Oh, man.
I love it almost every day of my life now, but, you know, I have a moderate amount, and I enjoy it to its fullest.
Yeah, there's those people. Something's wrong with them. I
agree. But I'm not judging. It just means it's more for me.
Exactly. Well, Stacy, thank you again so much for
giving us your time. Well, thank you, Vance. I appreciate it.
And as a reminder, if there's portions of the call that you missed or you want to pass it on to people, www.saturdayamlive.com, and to pick up a copy of Stacy's book, www.whyareyouwaiting.com, and 15% discount. Enter my name, Vance, in the coupon code to get that. So, well, Stacy, thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you in Cancun.
Definitely.
Lord willing, in a few months.
Are you going to Orlando next week?
No, I'm not. I'm actually emceeing an event in Seattle. So,
oh, okay. Well, good luck with it.
Can't be in two places at once. But
Fair enough. If anybody has any questions about anything I've talked about, you can also send me an email at Stacy, that's Stacey, @whyareyouwaiting.com, and I'll get back to you right away.
There you go. So there's her email address, Stacy, Stacey, @whyareyouwaiting.com. Well, thank you again, and Stacy, I'm going to let you go.
Okay, happy Saturday, everybody. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, thank you, you too.
Okay, take care. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.